To order for Wednesday, May 30th, 2007, our last official session of the 2007 legislature. Welcome, members. We are going to work on an interesting bill for our last session together. I'm going to call a work session on Senate Bill 724A. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 724A permits the issuance of teaching, personnel service, or administrative license or registration to a person convicted of misdemeanor prostitution if Teacher Standards and Practices Commission determines that person is fit to be a teacher and date of conviction is more than 5 years prior to the date of application. Allow school district to employ or contract with person convicted of misdemeanor prostitution if district determines the person is fit to be employed by or contract with the district and the date of conviction is more than 5 years prior to the date of employment or the date of contract. The committee also has before it an A6 amendment, which was sort of this reference briefly during our at the end of our last meeting. Excuse me. The A6 amendment would not change the part that I just discussed, but would do additional things to law. It would allow school districts to seek criminal records checks directly from the Department of State Police instead of through the Department of Education. Require a state and nationwide criminal records check for those people who have been required to have a background check. Prohibit school districts from using a person as a volunteer who has been convicted of a crime listed in ORS 342.143 or has made a false statement about being convicted for a crime. Authorize private schools to do the same. Direct school districts to consider volunteer noncompliance with criminal records check or fingerprint requirement to be mandatory grounds for termination of volunteer status. On request from a school district contractor, private school contractor, and with the consent of the individual, require the Department of Education request the state police conduct a state and nationwide criminal background check for a volunteer of a school district contractor or a private school contractor who may have or has direct unsupervised contact with school children. To expand the criminal records check coverage to employees or contractors who may have direct unsupervised contact with students. Authorize a criminal records check for school district volunteers or private school volunteers. Broaden the authorization for school districts or private schools to require fingerprints of contractors, direct employees and volunteers who, quote, may have, unquote, direct unsupervised contacts with students, and declare an emergency and take effect July 1st, 2007. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Yeah, absolutely. That was my plan. Representative Flores and Representative Barker are here, and if you'd like to talk on the amendments, I'd welcome your contributions. Representative Crummell, if you'd like to join them, I would be happy to have you in front of us so we can discuss the amendments.
Mr. Chair, is a lobbyist for retired prostitutes going to be here today?
Representative Greenlick, there's been no word on the lobbyist for retired prostitutes today. Thank you for asking. Vice Chair Kopp?
A question for staff. Mr. Olson, in this summary here, it has that the A6 amendment would allow school districts to seek criminal background checks from the state police instead of the Department of Education. I thought that the teacher standards and practices have that responsibility right now, not the Department of Education.
Mr. Chair, Representative Comp, my understanding, and I think we have representatives who, from those organizations who correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is Teacher Standards and Practice Commission does background checks for licensed and registered teachers, whereas Department of Education does such for classified personnel, including classified boys, bus drivers, and other school personnel, but not licensed or registered teachers. I believe that is the Division of Labor.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Does that answer your question?
Well, I didn't see any heads nodding to see if that was correct.
It's a head nodding if teacher standards.
Okay, because I do appreciate that and exact clarification.
And look out over the audience. Anybody you want to drag up here, we'll drag up here.
Over here on this side, I didn't see the...
Representatives, thanks for being with us. Would whoever like to start?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. I'm Representative Jeff Barker, House District 28. And I just want to start off by saying just briefly, you know, I was a police officer over 31 years, and I know what prostitution is, and it's not what's on TV, and it's not what's in the movies. And a lot of times these young girls get caught up in that with they're either runaway or the people they're running around with, and they're certainly redeemable human beings. And I'll leave it at that. But I think it's really important that society not just cast out somebody convicted of a misdemeanor, even though it's comes up under the question of moral turpitude. But prostitution isn't this fun thing like you see on TV. It's a 15-year-old girl with dirt on the back of her legs laying out in the weeds somewhere in northeast Portland. It's not a fun thing. And these are not jobs that these women seek. And I'd like to talk more about the amendments. Over the years, I processed hundreds of people and looked at lots of hundreds of background checks on people. But I've also seen my share of bad guys get into our school system who prey on children. We've all heard about the MO. The pedophiles seek out a target-rich environment, like a school playground, the gym class, the swimming pool, the football field. It's really sad, but these characters will find ways to infiltrate our school system so they can carry out their grooming tactics, that is, to earn the trust of a young child and then take advantage of it. Unfortunately, we've seen estimates that show up to 20% of all Oregon children will be molested before they're 18 years old. Today, Representative Crummell and I are presenting the committee with an amendment to Senate Bill 724, which would make our current system of screening adults much stronger in our schools. For those who say this is as a solution looking for a problem, look no further than the recent headlines, a few of the recent headlines. February 23rd, 31-year-old Joshua Shewell of South Salem sentenced to 75 months in prison after being convicted of sex abuse and sodomy. He worked as a teacher's aide at the Salem Child Development Center and volunteered in several Salem area public schools. He had been previously convicted of a similar incident with a young girl in 2001. Those details are a little bit sketchy on that. On March 6th, 38-year Lawrence Corey, a teacher's assistant from the Pendleton Alternative School, was arrested February 28th and charged with 10 counts of sexual crimes for allegedly abusing two young girls. May 16th, the guardian of a 15-year-old girl raped by a teacher's aide at a private school in Gresham sues the State Department of Education and the Gresham-Barlow School District. The aide, 28-year-old Daniel Alcazar, spent less than a year in prison for the rape. Had the school done a background check, they would have found Alcazar had already served 10 years in prison for murder. May 17th, Open Bible Christian School in Newburgh settles out of court after two coaches, Edward Woods and Christopher Lassiter, go to jail for sexually abusing teenage girls at the school. Background checks would have raised all kinds of red flags. And then a case that hits very close to home. May 10th, 32-year-old David Chapman faces 2 years in prison for allegedly sexually abusing a girl on his cheerleading squad on a flight back from the competition in Florida, then bragged about it on MySpace chat room. Chapman was a part-time cheerleading coach at Southridge High School in Beaverton, my school district, for the past 4 years. Chapman had prior convictions for assault, embezzlement, and other crimes, but the district didn't dig deep enough into his background to learn more about him. And I'd like to wrap up a little bit with about the potential cost. In the Chapman case, Beaverton Schools ran a $5 background check through the Oregon Department of Education. Well, maybe they got what they paid for. If we have the political courage to do these amendments, it might cost a little more, but think about the larger cost. If we prevent just one child from being abducted, from being molested, or worse, then it will have been well worth it. Because even one child is far too many. The physical and emotional costs to that child, to that family, are immeasurable. And I just add one more thing. Recently, after we passed Jessica's Law, which is against sexual predators, I got a letter from a man in prison. And I couldn't locate the letter. I thought I had it in my office, and I couldn't locate it. But in his letter, part of it said, "This man's been in prison since 2002, serving a 10-year term for molesting young boys." And I knew this. I've known this man for many years. I don't think he realized who I was when he sent me the letter, that he knew me. But he was always the coach. He was always here. He was always around the kids. And I wondered about him. I didn't know whether he was married or not, but I'd see him every once in a while. And anyway, he was taking advantage by finding the child with no father in the household. He would ingratiate himself to the mother. He was an administrator at Bonneville Power, nice-looking, powerful businessman in Portland. And pretty soon he'd say, "Gee, why don't I take the kid home for the weekend, you know, a little male bonding kind of thing." And what mother wouldn't be delighted to have this fine man do that? And then he would abuse them. And in his letter, the one part, this guy said that the problem is not with having oral sex with prepubescent boys. He said, that doesn't hurt the boys. What hurts the boys are the police, the hospitals, and the courts. This guy's in prison. He's going to be out, and he's going to be looking for another coaching job someplace. We need thorough background checks so that kind of a person can't move to another state, or somebody, in our case, move from another state to Oregon and hide that kind of a background. We need a thorough nationwide background check to protect our children. Thank you.
May I ask the Lieutenant the question?
Go ahead, Representative.
Sorry, thank you, Representative. Did any of those people you just mentioned, have they ever been convicted of a misdemeanor prostitution charge?
None that I know of.
And others that you've arrested, I'm sure, a large number of them. And any of them that you know of ever been convicted of a prostitution charge?
Of the child molesters?
Yeah.
No. I don't, not that I know of, Representative. And those are really quite separate. As I think you know, the child molesting, rape, those kind of things are more of a power trip, where prostitution is usually just a failure. You know, somebody's really in a problem and they have some guy running them out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenock. Representative Dullum.
Representative Barker, this amendment is not designed to augment, add to, subtract from the original bill. It's an opportunity that you saw to protect our children. There was never an attempt to make a correlation, was there?
There was no attempt to make a correlation. Representative Crummell and I, when we talked about this case in Bearden School District, and Representative Crummell's district comes up that way. In fact, at one time, I believe he was my representative before they redistricted. And we tried to have this bill on a standalone, but we're so late in the session, we had to hook it on to something else to get it through.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Flores, would you like to share your thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have Representative Crummell
pre-speaking. Very good. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. With regards to the amendments to Senate Bill 724, I've been a teacher off and on for a little over 30 years. And I remember when I first moved to Oregon in 1975 and applied for my license through TSPC, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, I had my fingerprints taken and they did a background check. In 1998, when I reinstated my teaching license after about a 20-year hiatus of not having my teaching license through TSPC because I was working at the collegiate level, I again went through the fingerprinting process. It was really pretty painless. I paid my $62 or whatever the amount was and went and had my fingerprints taken, sent everything off. And I think that from a standpoint of TSPC checking before I was licensed to make sure that I had a clean criminal record, well, no criminal record, makes it sound like I have a criminal. it really was a pretty painless process. I've also, over the last couple of years, as you know, have spent quite a bit of time researching and sponsoring legislation relative to sex offenders and trying to crack down on sex offenders and expose them wherever we can. And whether we like it or not, they are finding a way to infiltrate the schools. The amendments in the A6s do three things. It requires the local districts, to do background checks on all school employees, contracted workers, and volunteers. One of the issues that Representative Barker referenced out in Beaverton, the school district was relating to this person as a volunteer, and so they, even though he was being paid for his coaching duties. And also, it will be for these students who may have direct, unsupervised contact with students. As we understand it, the law is currently permissive, but the districts may do the checks. But this amendment would make it so that the districts must do the requests, or they shall do them. The second thing it will do is it allows the school districts to request background information directly from Oregon State Police. Or they can go ahead and go through the Department of Education. It's an option. And the reason why we give them the option is, number one, ODE does provide for a $10 service charge for running the check. And the second thing is that sometimes the school districts may want to just bypass that bureaucracy and go straight to the Oregon State Police and have the fingerprint print checks done directly through them. But it's an option, so they can go either way. I think, I'm not positive, but I think that the Portland schools already go directly through OSP for doing background checks. The third thing that it does is that it will require a state and federal background check. Right now, it's kind of hit or miss, as Representative Barker was noting, and we do have a very mobile society. What would happen if a teacher has just renewed their teaching license for 5 years, for example? They took a teaching job in Nevada, molested a student there, got convicted. Now they can't work in Nevada. They moved back to Oregon. TSPC's not been notified of their conviction, and they're back working in our schools. And they're back working in our schools where they have a propensity to try to attack students. Or abuse students. So I think we need to look at it in that way. With this background check, when they come back into the state, it would be, even though their license hasn't expired or lapsed, it would still, because they're getting a new job in the state, they would be required to have a background check done. If you don't think the amendments are necessary, then I think, you know, pick up the paper any day. And one of the things that I have found is this article right here. And you can't see it from there, but it says sexting involved three educators. And this is an article that was in the Statesman's Journal on May 17th. And it says three educators were among eight men arrested last weekend on public indecency charges when Polk County Sheriff's Office conducted an undercover sting targeting illegal sexual activity in a state park. Harry Nelson, 57, a teacher at Parrish Middle School. Right down the street here. Another one was a professor at Western Oregon University, John Backus. And Ronald Bridge is a teacher at Sunset Primary School in West Lynn. This tells me that we do have a problem.
What was the illegal behavior that they were engaged in?
Public indecency?
It was public indecency, but it says Nelson teaches science, math, Spanish. Last year, Nelson taught at the school. Nelson remains on administrative leave. The sting took place at Holman Wayside State Park. Another teacher, Ronald Bridge. Bridge has worked at the school since 2005. Public indecency is a revocable offense for school teachers if they are convicted. And John Backus, he's remaining working, but he was arrested, I believe, also for the and then another person was convicted as a sex offender and was convicted on sex abuse charges in 1996.
Was this nude sunbathing? Is that what we're talking about here?
No, this was Holman Wayside Park is a day use area just west of the city of Salem on Highway 22. I know we're right where that is. And they were, because I used to drive by there on my way to Western, by the way. Got to clarify that one. It is not a nude sunbathing area.
Representative, it's public indecencies. To sum it up, it's having sex in a place open to view of the public. Sexual
adult sex.
Could be. I mean, that was probably adult sex there, right? But it's out in public, sodomy, but consensual. It's just having sex out where the public, in plain view of the public, or where the public's likely to see it.
But how many times have we picked up the paper over the last couple of weeks, over the last few months? And there's an article about somebody that is abusing a child, and they are sexually abusing a child, and it's somebody that was. I'll tell you what, as a teacher, I'm getting sick and tired of having these damn teachers arrested for abusing kids. That's the last person you would expect to be abusing a child, and especially in a school. And I think it is absolutely reprehensible that they would be doing that. Now, what I would do with them personally, I'd string him up out here under the gold man by a certain body part.
Representative Dunn, did you have a question?
Representative Cromwell, you talked about exercising an option of going through ODE or OSP. Mm-hmm. What circumstances do you see a district going through the Oregon State Police? What would generate the necessity of going directly?
If they're, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dallum, if they are, if they're trying to speed the process along, they want to get the results directly so that they know it, because it's a hiring decision that they're making. The person is already licensed, so there may have been a background check done, but maybe they have gone, the person has gone out of state and is now returning and has applied for a position at the school, and they're going to have unsupervised contact with students. So they, instead of going to ODE, maybe they want to go ahead and save the applicant to $10 because it is revenue neutral. The school district can charge the applicant for running
follow-up
background check.
Then, from what I'm hearing you say, one is speed, two is cost. OSP would not charge the district?
No, excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Dallum, OSP is still going to charge, and the reason, but it depends on who's going to, the district can say it's the applicant that's going to make the payment, as opposed to them making the payment themselves. Or they could have the applicant reimburse the district out of their first paycheck. I mean, there's a variety of ways that the school district could do it. The point is that the school district can recover the cost. The second thing is, and so they may say, well, we want to save the applicant the $10 that the Oregon Department of Education would charge for running the background check. So we're going to just go directly to the Oregon State Police. I mean, there's a variety of other reasons a number of them that I haven't thought of as to why a district might request a background check themselves.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Vice Chair Pelt.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. And I don't know whether anybody can answer this. I was just wondering what the statutes are in Washington, Idaho, and California.
Nice to be happy.
Any idea?
I don't have, Mr. Chair and Representative Comp, I have not looked at the statutes in Washington or California or Idaho, so I don't know.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Okay. Mr. Greenland.
Yeah, Representative Crummel, you talked about about you being fingerprinted and had a background check, and mm-hmm. that all went all right?
Yes.
Would that process be changed by this bill in any way?
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, look, that particular process would not be changed. It would only, what it's going to do is that this broadens who the districts can check. Anybody that's a contractor or a volunteer or an employee that is going to have unsupervised contact with a student. So that, and in that respect, that's not being changed. And the process itself isn't being changed from a standpoint of having the fingerprints taken and then the background check being run by the Oregon State Police.
So what is the problem that this is solving? It's working fine.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlake, one of the things like Beaverton, when they went to the department and said, how about a background check? And they said, that guy's fine. They didn't know what he may or may not have had in his background. And the state police would be a direct, you would get the answer.
But they go to the state police, don't they?
But you would get the answer back directly from the state police instead of filtering it through somebody else who may or may not think something's important.
Clarification.
And also, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee.
Someone might have stuff in his background that they didn't bother to tell him about.
Currently, they may go do this process. The amendment would require the school district to do the process if a teacher is coming in from the outside.
Representative Rubin?
And another clarification. This bill also requires that volunteers and others, which current statutes do not require this kind of background check.
Representative, Mr. Chair and Representative Roland, that's correct.
Okay. Representative Roland, while we're on that point of volunteers, volunteers isn't defined in the amendment. Am I correct on that?
Actually, I was looking at that because that's been something that I've seen come up quite a bit in some of the emails that have gone around, Mr. Chair. And if you look on page 5 of the Dash A6 amendments, on lines 21 through 23, it says, a person who is a volunteer for a school district or private school and who has or may have direct unsupervised contact with children as determined by the district or the private school. If they are going to have direct unsupervised contact, they're going to need to have the background check done. So if they have, so let's say, and I've faced this many times. You have a parent has a kid playing on the football team, says, "Hey, I want to be an assistant football coach, and don't pay me. I just want to be there.
I want to help. Right?
I just want to help." Or a mom that is telling the dance instructor that they want to help with the cheerleading squad, or they want to help the dance team, or but would potentially have unsupervised direct contact with the student, then they would have to go through the background check process.
Thank you. Representative Flores, I'm sorry we haven't given you a chance to talk. I want to continue that point, but after, I want to hear your comments first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm state representative for House District 51, which is Clackamas, Damascus, Boring, and Estacada. I have 10 grandchildren, and I'm worried about who's watching over their kindergarten, their preschool, their elementary school. In fact, I have a daughter who for 3 years was teaching first grade and this year has moved to teaching kindergarten. And she is very concerned about how well we're screening people who come and go in her school. Between the school bus drivers, janitors, counselors, vending machine people, and the list goes on and on. In the 2005 legislative session, I worked very hard with Senator Vicky Walker on Senate Bill 755, which we did pass. It was a groundbreaking piece of legislation to help parents find out who was teaching their kids, opening up disciplinary records, and enhancing new policies and procedures for dealing with cases of child abuse in the schools. In fact, the day after I carried Senate Bill 755 on the House floor, a school bus driver for an ESD in my district was arrested for sexually assaulting a disabled student on the bus. When does it stop? It seems like every session we have to do more work in this area, which is fine because nothing is more important than our children and the security of our children. But it's just a little frustrating to have to keep revisiting the issue. Senate Bill 755 was in part driven by the Joe Bolera case here in Salem. He was a middle school band teacher who raped, sodomized, and sexually abused 4 young girls. Bolera is currently serving a 12-year sentence in OSP. Since that case, Salem Kaiser schools have done a number of things to prevent future cases, including better training and prevention efforts for staff and parents. And the district enhanced their background checks on all school district employees and volunteers. And I say, good for them. I wish we had more districts like Salem-Kaiser. If so, we wouldn't be here today. Listening to all the recent cases that Representative Barker talked about, Representative Crummell referenced, cases of criminals slipping through the cracks in our school systems, we wouldn't be here today talking about this amendment, this DAS-6 amendment. And it's really sad because who pays the price? The kids do. Not just the ones who have been victimized, but the other students in the school wondering what happened, wondering if a teacher's helper or a basketball coach or, for goodness sakes, a rally coach is like the bad teacher down the hall that Daddy was talking about the other day. Some legislators are suggesting we set this amendment aside for another day, that we take up a work group or a task force in the interim. I'm here to tell you, Mr. Chair, as former chair of the House Education Committee, we did do the work. We did the work last session. We did the work during the interim, and a couple of your members served on that interim committee. We asked the questions, and we, in fact, we did file a bill to do the very things that we're talking about in the DAS-6 amendments today. It's time to stop talking about all this and to do something about it before more kids get hurt. And in answer to some of the questions that have been raised from the committee, if I might, Mr.
Please,
Chair.
Please.
Some of the questions that you have asked and that will be posed to you by virtue of, I know, the flurry of discussions that are going on for advocates for children. We already have a good system. It's not broken, so why fix it? Well, if that's true, we wouldn't keep hearing about all these cases of adults hurting kids through the school system. Why take the chance? Why not have the best, most secure system that we possibly can with strong background checks? What are we afraid of, and how much is a student's life worth? And what about unsupervised contact? It's up to each local school district to determine who should have a full background check and who should not. And there's so many reasons why not to do this, but everyone is forgetting the main reason why we should do this. And you're going to hear numbers of reasons why we shouldn't do this. But the number one reason why we should is the safety of our kids. Volunteers and part-time or contract employees may spend only a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, an hour with our children unsupervised, but it only takes a few of those minutes, a few seconds, to molest a child and damage them for life. We don't want to create a barrier for volunteers in the schools, and you're going to hear that, nor do I. No one's trying to do that for good, law-abiding, well-meaning volunteers, which is 99% of them. What we do want is to discourage those who prey on kids from getting access to a wealth of vulnerable, potential victims. If cost is a problem for low-income volunteers, I know there are creative ways to deal with that within the district, whether it's a... for goodness sake, another bake sale to raise those funds or whatever, but or somebody will be able to help assist with those costs. Talked about the checks, the different distinctions. FBI checks are not foolproof. You'll hear that. Yeah, but each state reports different information, so not much is added to the in-state check. Well, the current nationwide database used by FBI may not be perfect, but is the only system we have. And with such a mobile society, we need to know who's moving into our state and being around our kids in school. How much would these background checks cost if a district were to go directly to OSP and have them do the screenings? Well, according to the Oregon State Police, the OSP check plus a federal FBI check with fingerprints for regular school employees and contractors would be $28 for Oregon checks plus $24 for an FBI check, for a total of $52. An OSP state check plus a federal FBI check with fingerprints for school volunteers would be $28 for the Oregon check and $18 for the FBI check, or $48. The OSP name-only, Oregon-only check would be $4. Now, if a school district were to go through ODE, there would be a $10 administrative fee on top of that, and which is the current system. And by the way, ODE can run that check and not report the results of that check to the school district, so the school district can hire without the benefit of that information. No, you don't have to pay the fee twice. Once you're checked out by a school district, you're good to go for whatever classroom you want. We do have concerns that local school officials can't handle this sensitive private information. We've heard that. School districts shouldn't have to handle that private sensitive information. But, you know, volunteer groups and churches do these very same type of background checks now, and they're handling it. And by the way, school districts handling that type of information is local decision-making. Portland School District, yes, Representative Crummell, you were correct, does go directly to OSP now. So why can't other districts handle it? That might actually save the school district money. We all know the high cost of liability insurance, and we've been told that many insurance companies are cutting the cost if your group does thorough screenings for employees. In fact, the bad actors who slip through the cracks can cost a school district their licenses to operate, such as the Academy in Gresham, Representative Lim, or costly civil litigation. Once again, committee members, I urge your adoption of the Dash 6 amendments to this House bill.
Thank you, Representative Flores. Can I ask you a question on the Salem Kaiser
School?
The Salem Kaiser School District, you mentioned doing enhanced background checks. Are they doing the type of background checks that this amendment proposes in the Salem Kaiser School District?
It is my understanding that they're actually doing more than what this bill does.
And I would assume then they have a written policy then to define what a volunteer is in terms of, I'm getting nods to the head on that one.
Yes.
That's something to look into.
That's my understanding.
I just want to clarify, too, that the statement about the Department of Education reading background checks, you're not implying that the department would withhold a background information. Okay, thank you very much. Members, questions?
Yes, Jim.
I think maybe the group can confirm this, but I think that all smart readers are required. I don't know which check they get, but so the system, the schools already have a system of doing that for all the smart readers. I know in my we talked about that in the Ways and Means process last year. That's the big expense for the smart reading program is the background checks.
But I believe so, but I don't believe that's in state law. I mean, that's just the school stepping up to their responsibilities.
And I just want to give you on the volunteer issue again, give you one more shot at describing it. If a parent, for instance, with my son's middle school class, I would volunteer on field trips when buses weren't available. I'd drive four kids. You know, so would I have to get a background check in order to drive those four kids someplace? We went from the middle school to the ice rink.
Yep.
So would that?
Most likely. Yep.
If I might say, when the law was first passed, I believe it was 93, and we have somebody in the room that has that history at their disposal. But and I know it was because the law was just new, and we sent our first batch through, and we screened out two child molesters. And I never, in 15 years after that, got one. So it was astounding that we had the law, and I think that it is time that we revisit this law. I know that the district that I served in, we wrestled with this because it's not a small amount, particularly when somebody wants to volunteer. So we established a policy that said if a person was in a position where they could establish a relationship, and we thought certainly that it would take days and weeks to establish a relationship, but I have to defer to Representative Flores. It takes minutes. Some adults are like Pied Pipers, and in minutes they establish a relationship. So I see this amendment. I am really concerned that it is an amendment. I think it has merit to stand in its own right, but I'll take this opportunity that's here and now.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Weldon, did you have some?
I was going to say, I think a number of school districts, the example you've given, even going on overnight trips, most of our districts do background checks now. And you don't get to go if you don't, because it's okay. Gotten to that point. And so,
you don't dare risk it.
Yeah, you don't want to risk it.
Representative Flores, Representative Krummel's on the committee, so we'll hear what he has to say. Representative Barker's already made his comments about the underlying bill. Do you have any comments about the underlying bill that you wish to offer at this point?
Mr. Chair, who will ask all the questions if Mr. Krummel's over there?
we're doing pretty good so far.
That's the only reason we agreed to come tell you.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just say that I would suggest, and from my opinion, that Senate Bill 724 would be a much stronger bill with the Dash 6 amendments included, and would be something that I think that citizens will be able to appreciate the safeguards that are inserted with these amendments.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, allowing somebody who's had a prostitution record to get a job doesn't mean they have to give them the job, and so they would schools would closely look at what the case was, you know, what the facts were involved in that. And my experience in seeing a lot of younger women who were caught in prostitution, they were truly redeemable people. And many programs, you know, to help them get back on their feet and get moved on with their life. And those are the kind of people that we shouldn't exclude from anything. I mean, it's a misdemeanor. I understand the moral turpitude question and all that, but these, again, prostitution isn't the movies and TV. It's a totally different thing out in real life.
Thank you, Representative Barker.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time and being here today. Mr. Wilson, we have some people that could talk on the technical aspects of background checks.
Yes, Mr. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have three experts who might be able to help us on some of the technical questions. Deborah Lincoln from the Department of Education, Mark Faulkner of the Oregon State Police, and George Finch from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and perhaps they could come up to answer technical questions about the background checks.
We appreciate it if you join in the conversation to see if the members have any questions on background checks.
You need to move that chair for me.
I was going to say. I'll
come around. Very good. And any we're having a discussion on the bill, so I welcome your comments on any aspect of the bill or the amendments.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. For the record, my name is Deborah Lincoln. I'm with the Department of Education. I am the Director of Pupil Transportation and Fingerprinting, so I do all these fingerprinting and have been involved in it since 1993 when we passed the fingerprinting bill originally. I didn't really prepare any testimony. I thought that you would maybe want to ask questions about the process, but I would make a couple of statements. Currently, ORS 326.603 requires the Department of Education and districts to fingerprint all employees of school districts and contractors. 326.607 allows us gives us permission to do background checks or ledge checks on volunteers. So at this point, we're not able to do a fingerprint check on volunteers, only employees. Fingerprinting is a snapshot in time. And so when somebody has been fingerprinted and we look at their background, it's not an indication necessarily of what they're thinking about doing or what they haven't yet been caught. And so often you hear on the newspaper of people who've done these heinous crimes, they have no background. And when it comes to the individual in Beaverton, the most recent one here, he was presented to the Department of Ed as a volunteer. We did the background check, and we gave back to Beaverton accurate information about what record we found at the time. They did not indicate to us that he was an employee. We have sent information to districts when this first started back in 1993 that answered the question. It didn't matter how much you worked. You were an employee. You would be subject to this law. Even today, had this individual been fingerprinted, there would be nothing in his background that would indicate that he was about to do any of these things to students. The other thing that I might mention, too, is that I would be concerned that if a district was to send their fingerprinting to the state police and they get rejected, then they might get lost. Currently, when we get a fingerprint, we entered into a database with all the information about the person, and then when we get the rejection back from the state police or the FBI, we track it, and then we make them go back and resubmit. It's all computerized, and we have a way of tracking that. I'm not sure that would or could be done with the district. They would have to develop a way to do that. I think that we have done a very good job in reporting back criminal records, both on the LEDS checks and on the fingerprint checks. And I happened to be off the day that the thing hit the news about the Beaverton coach, and I was mortified to think that we might have made a mistake. I immediately came in and checked to see that if we had made an error, and we had not. We reported correctly what we found to Beaverton, and so I'm very proud of my staff. They're very dedicated, and they're very interested, as you are, in the safety of children.
Thank you very much. Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, before we forget it, Mrs. Lincoln, what did you find? You said you reported to them what you found, but I thought you said there was nothing in his record.
Chair Buckley and Representative Wisner, I have to be careful because the records are confidential. And so I'm going to tell you some information that was on the news, but I'm going to have to be very careful about what I know is in this person's background. We reported back to the district that he did, in fact, have a theft, and that, in fact, is true, and it still is there. It is like about 8 years old, if I remember correctly. Unfortunately, the news media also reported that he had some other crimes. And this, it goes to the very problem about reading a record, because that was not a true crime. When people get arrested in this country, in this state, you have to also be convicted. And in that particular instance, that person was not arrested and convicted of the crime. And that's really all I can say without revealing something confidential that I know about that record. And again, that reflects the problem with reading a record. If you don't know how to read it, you could be reporting back incorrect information. This is what happened.
Representative Dolan.
Yes, Director Lincoln, I suppose, is appropriate. I want to dig out the process a little bit. I'm putting together a hiring committee, and we'd have the fingerprints, and we send them to you. And I call you up. My question to you is, are they all right, Deborah? And your answer to me is yes or no. And if you say no, don't most administrators at this point in time give that authority to you to examine the record, determine how they fit with the template of the law, and don't most of them accept your answer simply as a yes or a no?
Chair Buckley, Representative Dolan, the way the process works, there is a list of crimes in 326.603, that's in 342.143, that's a list of really heinous crimes. And if you've ever convicted of those, you're not allowed to work with children. And we send a letter back to the district saying they cannot work for you. That's the end of the subject. They're also in 326, says that if you make a false statement as to the conviction of a crime, and that was very specific back in 1993, that they wanted that to be part of the law. If you make a false statement, then you would be denied employment. So when the person is going to be fingerprinted, they give us their prints on a card, and they have a notarized form that they fill out, which they answer a series of questions. Have you been convicted of a DUI? Have you been convicted of any other crime? If they answer falsely, then again, they're going to be denied employment. If they answer yes, it's on the form, and the district can ask them, what's the crime? We then can confirm or deny whatever we find up. So again, in that sense, it is up to the district, but we tell them whether it's one of those really heinous crimes or whether they've falsely sworn about whether they've been convicted or not. And it's interesting that it says ever. So, I mean, I have lots of times people have something that's 50 years old that might disqualify them because they weren't truthful about it. The school bus drivers have an entirely different set of criteria. That's 3 years from the custody, probation, or parole that they're disqualified.
I may have a little latitude just for a moment. So if we gave this authority to school districts, which I'm not particularly bothered with one way or the other, I myself would go to you. If we gave this authority to a school district and they wanted to verify what they had done was accurate, would your fine officers be available to assist them?
Representative Buckley, Chair Dolan, thank you for the vote of confidence. I would assume that the department would provide whatever assistance we could. I mean, that's our business, is to help districts.
Thank you. Then a second question, and you talked about the person that is charged but not convicted, and you talked about not screening out certain people, but there's always the possibility that if we did these background checks as prescribed by the amendment, we could screen out people that had been volunteering, that had not been fingerprinted, that were criminals. I mean, we could broaden the scope of the screen, couldn't we?
Chair Buckley, Representative Dodd, I'm not sure I quite understand that question.
Right now, if you are, there is a fingerprinting for employees and background checks for volunteers. If we put volunteers to the background check, isn't there the possibility that we could screen out some people that we would not want in front of our children?
Chair Buckley, Representative Dolan, I would say that that is a possibility, that if a person came from another state and was a volunteer, that we might not know that record in the LEDS check, because that's a Oregon check, that we might find somebody, in fact, that has something from another state that we would find in fingerprint. I believe that's why I've made the comments to the committee that I think it would be good if it was permissive for us to check volunteers, because right now we're not allowed to fingerprint volunteers.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair,
I would just comment that that's why we want to make it mandatory or required to check volunteers, just so that we don't end up in a situation, because I think it's permissiveness that can get us into some trouble. One of the things, because we asked Cindy Hunt from Legislative Council kind of the same sort of question, because of what they what it says in 326 ORS 326-607, and her response was that the statute gives school districts the option of requesting a state criminal background state criminal records check for volunteers. It does not prohibit a federal records check. However, there is no statutory authorization for a criminal records check on volunteers that uses something other than the law enforcement data system or LEDS.
Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Lincoln, when you testified before this committee earlier on 2613, which we should also be discussing today, but I think you explained you have how many FTEs do you have doing this, and how much of your time is devoted to this versus the transportation area?
Chair Buckley, Representative Wisnett, I have one FTE that is total full-time doing the fingerprinting. I also have one FTE that does the LEDS background. I have other staff also that we kind of shuffle around as the workflow where the people transportation comes and goes. There are periods that are higher or lower that we all occasionally will process the fingerprinting or the LEDS checks. I probably spend about 25% of my time on fingerprinting.
Thank you. Quick follow-up.
And
maybe our representative in state police can answer this better, but it, you know, it seems to me a problem we have is if you do your job and you do your job correctly, there's no way that just something's going to flash, you're going to get a ring on your cell phone saying the guy committed a crime. In other words, you're only doing what's in the past. If someone gets caught out of state or doing something, that's going to take a while to get back in the system. Is that correct?
Chair Buckley, Representative Wisdom, that's absolutely correct. And again, in this country, you're not guilty until you've gone before a court. And so that is a problem that just because somebody's arrested doesn't necessarily mean they've been convicted or that they are, in fact, guilty.
But even the convictions you don't get. Does that go? Because you're not. It's nothing's going to trigger you to go back and check. And we have an employee that got a conviction in another state. That.
Chair Buckley, Representative Wisnett, that's correct. And I don't think this bill does that either.
No.
It doesn't tell us to go back retroactively or concurrently keep looking at people.
Yeah.
The only people that are subject to that happen to be school bus drivers. And every time at renewal, we look at their background check.
You're going to stop saying you're in deep doo-doo. You rape a child. It's okay. In all seriousness, I think that's something we should visit. But I'll take what I can get with this one.
Do either of you gentlemen care to offer comments about what we've been discussing right now?
Well, I'm Mark Forkner with the Oregon State Police Identification Services Section. I'm the manager of the department that actually does these background checks. And the, I guess one of the issues that we have is that the information that might be going directly to the districts as opposed to going to the Department of Education or Teacher Standards and Practices, all of those folks that are going to be looking at this information at the district level is going to have to be going through background checks themselves because we can't disseminate that information directly to them.
There was early testimony with the Portland Public Schools using OSP. Is that, are all those people then giving background checks? Or?
I'm not aware that they are doing background checks directly through us.
Thank you.
Not to say they couldn't be, but right. I'm not aware of it. It's not by fingerprints. They might be doing a name search, but the fingerprint-based, it has to go through Department of Ed or teacher standards.
Representative Dolan?
When school districts are notified of a child molester in the district, does that come from your office?
Not directly. And you've got to remember also that a background check is only good the day it's done. Things change. And so I think partly what was discussed here is if a background is checked on an employee, and let's say 6 months down the road they do something, will a flag go back to the district saying, hey, wait a minute, this person's done something? That system doesn't exist.
Let's look at that a different way. 6 months after the employee is hired, an administrator, an elementary principal, high school principal, or superintendent sees things and has things reported to them, which happens on occasion. Would it be appropriate for them to be able to run a background check through you? And where I'm going is I'm on the other side of the coin. 99.9% of the time we're going to come up zero. But what I'm looking at is for the way we come up one time with a check. And as far as protecting the information, I do know that in schools we get lists of child molesters, and was at that time not very public. It was not public information. But the school administrators had to be trusted with that information. I really don't have a problem with trusting school administrators. This bill's I'd like to do some cleanup with it, but I don't think we're going to get a chance.
Did you have any further comments you wanted to make?
Also, one thing to keep in mind is that the name checks that are done, you don't know for sure if that's the person you're looking at. Fingerprints are the only way you can positively identify somebody. Anybody can use any name, any date of birth, and you should see some of the arrest records. They've got multiple names, multiple date of births, multiple Social Security numbers. Every time they've been arrested, they use a different name, different date of birth. And so you don't know what information they are presenting to you at the time, saying, hey, I'm Mark Faulkner, I need to have my background check, here's my name and date of birth. You don't know if that's truly my name and my date of birth. And who knows what name I used when I was arrested, so that the two may not mesh. Fingerprints are the definitive way to do it. They're federal, they're statewide. All criminal histories are all based upon fingerprints. I can tell you that my name was Lisa Miller and have my prints run, and it's going to come back and say, no, that's Mark Faulkner, because I can't lie about my fingerprints. So the fingerprint method is by far the most definitive, accurate way to do it. And you get nationwide results as opposed to only Oregon, which is only the name search way.
Thank you very much. Does Teacher Standards and Practice have anything to add here?
I just wanted to add a few things. I'm George Finch from Teacher Standards and Practice Commission. There was some discussion, I think, about the background check being sort of a snapshot in time of a person's background or what they have done. Generally, if a person is arrested, it's quite often police do inform us. They'll ask, what's your profession? They'll say they're a teacher. If it's a crime that would give them concern, oftentimes we do get calls from police. We will often get calls from out of state. I just recently had a case with an educator who was sending inappropriate materials to convicted sex offenders. The prison notified us of that. There's quite a bit of information coming into our office. But I would agree with everyone here that having multiple people looking at someone's background could be a concern. Trying to determine what is important from an arrest. You may look at someone who has multiple arrests from the time they were a teenager. Should that be a reason to keep them from being a volunteer? I don't know. I think it depends on who you have looking at it. Are you having attorneys and like in our office, former police officers who are investigators looking at that record? Or are you having school administrators? I think the eye looking at it may be quite different. So that's something that I think TSBC that would be around, so.
Questions? Representative Krimmel?
I guess it's kind of an interesting point that you made, George, and that is, you know, the difference of a school administrator looking at it as opposed to a police officer or an attorney and that sort of thing. I haven't decided yet whether that's a complimentary remark or not, but from a volunteer standpoint, and maybe this is something that administrators should be trained in, even if they're not. But I would think that from a volunteer standpoint, what I'm going to be looking, you know, if a person's had arrests or even if they've had a conviction, I think anyway, without more information, I think what I would be looking at is what was the crime. If it was, you know, armed robbery, was it child molesting? I don't want them anywhere near my school. Was it DUI? You know, we might have the opportunity to use that person as a role model for how people turn their lives around. I mean, there's a variety of ways that information can be useful. I guess, and earlier on when folks were kind of, and I felt sort of dismissing it out of hand from a standpoint of saying, well, you know, almost that, well, you know, school administrators and school types aren't qualified to look at this information, and it's sensitive information, and they really shouldn't have that. Well, if they shouldn't have that, I don't want them to have my Social Security number. I don't want them to have my full name. I don't want them to have my date of birth. I don't want them to have anything on, any information about me, and they've got all of that information. Plus, they've probably got my credit score. They've probably got my credit history. They probably know more about me than I know about me.
They probably know where you live.
And that can be a problem too, I guess. But my point is that, I mean, these are people that have to be trusted with sensitive data. And if we don't want to trust them with that kind of data, like I said, I'm not sure I want to trust them with the other data either.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions or comments? Representative Dahl?
Teacher standards and practices, when they hear more information than anything. When they hear, in your relationship with Oregon State Police and in your relationship with local law enforcement, when you hear of a criminal offense, do you have the authority or the can you add that to the person's record, or do you need something more formal?
Chair, Representative Dahl, generally if we find out information, for example, from the media, it's something we'll wait to find out if there's a conviction. What we don't want to do is jump the gun and discipline someone or pull them out of the classroom for something that may have been a misunderstanding. So we'll generally wait for there to be a conviction. If it's something that's very sensitive, generally the school will put them in administrative leave. So that takes away any immediate danger to students. But it's something that we do track and keep a record.
But if you are aware of a conviction, either through the newspaper or however you can add that to their record then and immediately.
Chair, Representative Donnelly, yes, we do. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you very much for coming forward today and helping us with this conversation. I'd like to, since we are still in work session, there are many folks who have been kind enough to give time via emails on these amendments. If there's anyone in the room who would like to come forward and talk, share their thoughts, you'd be more than welcome to at this point. Or if you'd rather just leave it alone, you'd be more than welcome to that as well.
did Mrs. Lincoln have, did ODE look at this or have the amendments, or do they have any further comments on the amendments?
No comments on the amendments.
She would like to raise
right.
Terry Gass.
Chair Beckley, with your permission, I have comments on the underlying provisions of 724.
I'd love to hear any comments about any part of what we're discussing.
Thank you. Civil Hub, for the record, with the Oregon Law Center, which is a civil legal services provider. And I wanted to just address some of the questions that were raised at the committee hearing last week regarding how other Western states address the issue of a conviction for misdemeanor crime of prostitution when considering whether or not to grant or revoke a teacher certificate. And so I just wanted to make sure that the committee had that information while they're considering this proposal. What I found was that in Idaho, California, Washington, and then Nevada, none of those states specifically look at the issue of conviction for misdemeanor prostitution, and none of those states consider that as an absolute bar to issuance of a certificate. In fact, none of those states mention that crime at all. I've summarized in the document that's handed out how each of those states handle the issue of convictions. I can briefly summarize that California specifically identifies some convictions. Basically, there are serious violent felonies or drug convictions that are considered as an absolute bar to certification. However, the statute goes on to say that after 5 years have passed, if the board determines that the person has been rehabilitated, then they may there is the discretion to allow that person to continue. In Idaho, there is simply discretionary authority for the board to consider all sorts of convictions and other facts and circumstances when looking at whether to allow certification. But there is an absolute prohibition for certain felonies involving crimes against children. And those are the only ones that are an absolute bar. In Nevada, the statute set out various forms of conduct, including convictions that are possible grounds for dismissal, but list only felonies and crimes of moral turpitude as mandatory grounds for dismissal. Washington is sort of similar in that it sets out specific crimes that are felonies involving physical neglect of a child, injury or death, sexual exploitation and sexual offenses, crimes related to minors as bars to employment. I looked at the superficially at the realm of other states' laws, and I found that there were 10 that had absolutely no specific bars or prohibitions and left all of the employment and hiring decisions to the board, the equivalent of the TSPC in that state, in making their determinations. The vast majority of the other states had some bars, and those bars were felony crimes or crimes involving behavior towards children. None of those states that I could find listed had any consideration of the crime of prostitution. And so I would just reiterate my support expressed last week of allowing the TSPC to use its discretion in those circumstances related to crimes of misdemeanor prostitution, because we have seen that there is such a crossover between that crime and people who have been victims of assault, incest, abuse, trafficking, et cetera, and where people have been rehabilitated, have overcome those difficulties. Our office is supportive of opening doors for people who've overcome those great barriers and have something to offer to society. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. I really appreciate you doing the background work here on the bill and bringing this information forward to the questions. Representative Crummell.
I have one, and I don't remember, Sybil, if you were at the table last week, and so you can help my short-term memory here by telling me whether you were or not, when we were discussing the issue around expunction of crimes, and prostitution being one that can be expunged, and any comments that you might have relative to, because the underlying bill has it after 5 years, but an you can have your record expunged after 3 years. And any thoughts about that?
Thank you, Chair Buckley, Representative Crummell. I was in the room during that discussion. I wasn't at the table in any expert way on that particular issue. I don't have a background in expungement procedures. What I can offer, though, is that in our experience, we have found that the expungement process is not as effective as we would like in actually removing evidence from a person's record. As I think I mentioned before, the Internet and other sources very often disclose a record that may have been officially expunged, but it's still something that the TSPC or another sort of organization could be aware of and then taking into consideration. I don't believe that the bill as written would make it more difficult for people with those convictions, because if a conviction were in fact expunged and that were working appropriately, then that record wouldn't show up. If it did show up, I think the bill would say after 5 years, regardless of whether it's been expunged, we can still consider this person's fitness as a teacher in on a case-by-case basis. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
While I have you, if you'd be kind enough to answer, if you can, moral turpitude
turpitude. Do you have a definition of that that you can offer?
I don't, typically I don't. It looked to me like that's defined differently in different states according to rules, and I wasn't able to get to the level of determining how exactly that definition exists in other states. I don't know if there are people here who might know what that definition means.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your efforts on this.
Thank you.
Again, I'll make one last call. If anybody has anything they'd like to say about the underlying bill, the proposed amendment, speak now or forever hold your peace. Members, we do. Come on.
Play forever hold your peace is too much, huh?
Extend your afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm Otto Schell. I'm the legislative director with the Oregon PTA. I gave you an email in response to Mr. Olson's email. I just wanted to come up and offer some proportionality. When I got Mr. Olson's email, I sent it out to a lot of PTA leaders, and I asked them, what do you think about this, particularly as it relates to all the volunteers? And everybody that wrote back to me, and it was a small handful because it was the Memorial Day weekend, and it was a short time frame by close of business on Friday, as I recall, everyone told me about how their schools do it. They all had a system. Some of them got me the details and emailed them to me. Every district that our leaders were involved in, these the small list of people, had a program to screen volunteers in some way. The other thing is that to a person, I couldn't get anybody to give me an anecdote of a problem where something had occurred, because reading out of the newspaper is one thing, but to have facts. So while I was sitting in the back of the room, and of course my computer's gone to sleep now, I found that the crime statistics show that, not to my surprise, the schools are safer than any other place that a kid can go. And it's something you need to have in mind when you're thinking about laying on a pretty substantial layer of screening and suspicion and other things. The reason those stories are in the news is because it is news. It's also reflective of how we treat things in our society. It's not to say that we shouldn't be concerned about kids and their safety, because that should be the priority. But we need to be smart about how we do that. In this document, Status of Oregon's Children, there's a newer version, I just couldn't put my hands on it. One of the markers for child abuse is 94% of perpetrators of child abuse are family. That's something to think about when you're thinking about every volunteer, everybody being put on some kind of a list to be evaluated or screened. We have about 20,000, a little bit over 20,000 members. $50 a pop, that's $1 million. I could think of a lot of other things that you could do for $1 million that would make kids safer. And I'd be happy to be involved in that work group, whatever that would look like. There are a lot of other risks to kids for injury and life-changing problems that this isn't going to get to. And those are the things that are on my mind when I hear the discussion ongoing. I think it's important we think about safety. I think we should be looking at every district, every school, make sure they have a robust plan to evaluate who's in their building, how they keep track of that. You know, the other key that I'm very mindful of is that the key to academic success is volunteers, parent volunteers. This will be a huge impediment to getting parent volunteers in a building. I fill out every one of those checks. My kid's a seventh grader in Northeast Portland. I've signed a lot of those $5 deals. I've had my fingerprints taken for other things. I'm a lawyer. I've been fingerprinted for that. I'm not adverse to being checked. But this needs proportionality. You need to think about who it is that you're screening and why, and be really smart about it. So, thank you.
Appreciate you coming forward. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask a couple of questions, if I might, because I think that, you know, it's important. I think you raised some very good issues. But if there was one kid, or if there was one volunteer that we found out later had had abused or violated three kids, the $50 or $70 to have that person checked, and they had a history of it, we find out later that they had a history of it, the cost to the child or those children in terms of the way their life has now been changed, and $50 or the $70.
You bet. No one's going to disagree with you on a case-by-case basis. Each one of those cases are horrible. Each one of them changes a life of a kid and the people around him. The counterpoint to that is I don't see us really going whole hog on background checks for purchasing guns. A lot of people get injured by guns, and what do we do by way of background checks on that? Not everybody gets checked. Not everybody who has a gun gets checked. The counterpoint to it, too, is that the other experts testified that not infrequently folks show up, no background, no prior convictions. Convictions are the key here, as I understand it. The convictions, either they don't exist or they don't show up. And then, the question is, are we trying to use a sledgehammer for something that maybe a scalpel is required? I think that there are other ways for us to tend to children's safety. I don't dispute for a minute that any one case is a terrible thing, and nobody wants to see that happen. So,
Representative Roblin?
Yeah, my question was just this. We do some checks now on volunteers, especially those that are going to be with kids, and it is a smaller one. And I know that there are a number of schools when that happens, when they explain that, a number of people choose then not to become volunteers, probably appropriately so. My thing is that there would be a number of people, if they were told we have two fingerprints, would say, don't think I want to do that. And you wouldn't have to do the $50. Right. And you would not have put the kid in harm's way with a person who knows that that's what's going to happen by the credit check.
Likewise, there would be law-abiding folks who don't want their fingerprints in a data bank.
That's true.
Mine are already there. I gave them up to become a lawyer.
That's right. So. That's true.
Well, I have Representative Dolleman and Representative Greenlee.
All right. It's interesting. In 1993, at a school board meeting, we're talking about fingerprinting teachers. I don't think you missed an argument we heard at those meetings. I don't think you missed one.
They read my email.
Early.
You bet.
And I do want to go on to comment. I don't think we can err to the side of safety ever. But there's a reason. In fact, you are absolutely correct. When a school bus is in an accident, it's news because they are so safe. But that doesn't stop the National School Bus Transportation people from meeting every 5 years and examining every square inch of the bus, the driver, the process, and learning more. And in fact, every 5 years, the question of seatbelts is raised, just like clockwork. That also doesn't preclude schools from meeting at every opportunity. In fact, having safety committees that go through the building, go through the staff, because we were there yesterday doesn't mean we're there tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So the statement you made about safety in schools and buses, it's always only as good as today, and constant vigilance is always necessary. And I feel compelled to make those statements.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Greenlee.
Yeah, I was really taken by the proportionality question, and particularly around volunteers. I was fingerprinted. In fact, I was fingerprinted when I was arrested in the 60s. I was fingerprinted when arrested but not convicted. I was fingerprinted when I got U.S. Navy security clearance to do a project with them. I had to fingerprint a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talk about how important volunteers are, and I've been trying to get it together to go volunteer. I volunteer at university, I volunteer at other places, but okay, now I decide I'm going to go volunteer. They say, no problem, you want to volunteer? We really appreciate it. Write a check for $52 and have your fingerprints taken. And my answer is, well, listen, fellas, I've got enough to do without doing that. And if you don't think this is going to be an impediment, and it isn't an impediment, maybe 1 out of 1,000 or 1 out of 100 or some number will be an impediment because they don't want you to do a security check and find out that, let's say you were arrested for prostitution 20 years ago for soliciting prostitution, the same offense. It just seems to me we really ought to be careful before we, and be pretty sure about what we're doing. We want to do something that will now require every school district to fingerprint and get a national background check on every single person who is nice enough to come in to volunteer their services. I mean, I do think the chilling effect is going to be significant.
Representative Greenwick and Chair Buckley, I can tell you, because I did kind of a quick and dirty Google search, because that's what we do these days, when you run background checks in schools, background checks is the term that always gets picked up. Over and over, different states talk about their backlog, the lack of personnel, the inability to make timely searches, particularly when you're doing the extensive one. Modern technology is very cool when it comes to fingerprinting, but it is, if it's on a piece of paper and you feed it into a machine, it's fraught with peril. I was sitting in the back of the room thinking about no-fly lists and people's names that get on no-fly lists and they can't get off. And they're not the John Smith that wants to be the volunteer in school, is the analogy here. And they don't get in, and they won't get in. And we build the barriers higher and higher. In the modern two-paycheck world, getting volunteers into school is a challenge. I mean, I can tell you over and over, it's the mandate for our organization is to provide meaningful parent involvement, and it's a tough thing in the modern world. If you add this on, the pool of volunteers is going to shrink up. Will we catch some bad guys? Maybe. I don't know. The statistics are... I didn't hear anything today that convinced me that the kind of plan that we would roll out would actually make the kind of difference we would hope it would. So,
Representative Rubin.
Just a comment. I didn't read this as all volunteers. I read it as volunteers who have
that's correct.
But individual time with an individual student and other kinds of things.
Representative Roblin and Chair Buckley, that's correct, but think about it from your experience in school. Here's dad one. Is he going to have unsupervised contact with the kids? I don't know. Does he get a green card versus a yellow card to go to do whatever the classroom thing? When I would show up in schools, there were times where we would have private reading groups sitting out in the hall that were visible to the world, but is that unsupervised time with the kid? I don't know. It's, you know, me and four kids reading books in the hallway. So,
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Snow, I'd have to ask you, are you speaking on behalf of your membership or yourself in opposing this amendment?
Actually, we take no position on it currently. I'm just asking for proportionality.
You're opposing the amendment.
I'm trying to suggest to you that there's another way to look at
that's
this.
That's your opinion or your membership's member?
Our leadership, our executive board, responded to me, so I feel confident that their position is that the existing vetting that occurs in their various districts, they square up with my experience too. We also have a resolution in place both nationally and statewide supporting the screening of teachers, so we've had this discussion. We understand when there is this longer term experience with kids in schools, there's a need for smart, safe rules. When you're asking about every volunteer, that's different, or every volunteer with individual contact with kids, that's different.
As a former PTA member, I would be surprised if your membership didn't support this. Most of your volunteers are not going to worry about the money. They're going to worry about they're there for the kids and the safety.
I respect your opinion, but I can tell you from the quick response I got by email, every one of them was concerned that it would stop volunteers coming to the schools.
There was any problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out, I guess, something about the proportionality. You know, everything is proportional. 3%, 3 to 7% of the population in this country is who's involved in illicit activities. Yet we write laws and rules to control the other 93%, 93 to 97%. We now have, you know, what, 1% of the population is involved in some kind of activity when they fly on an airplane, but the other 99% have to conform to certain types of searches and checks in order to get on an airplane. I think, you know, quite frankly, tell you the 3% to start acting like the rest of the 97%, we wouldn't have these damn problems. We could throw half these laws away. And we can say, well, you know, only 1% of the kids get molested in school by a volunteer or a teacher or somebody. Yeah. You know, a few years ago, the comment was made, well, we only have a 6% unemployment rate. If you're the one that's unemployed, it might as well be 100%. And I'll guarantee it, if you're the 1% that gets abused, it might as well be 100%. It doesn't matter at that point whether it's 99% or 1% because you're it. And I still think that if we prevent one child from being abused by a volunteer, then we have met our goal. We have done some good with this kind of a bill.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you so much for caring enough to come forward and help us with this deliberation. Members, we are in work session. I'm just going to tell you where I'm at with this bill and allow you to comment, too, because we will do a movement on the motion on the amendment and motion on the bill itself as well. This is an extremely difficult bill. The underlying bill I'm very much in favor of. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's a fair thing to do. But I also understand politically it's awful. The reason the camera's here is because of the way this bill will get framed in the media. And I know what the position that puts people in. Like I say, I'm strongly for it. I'm happy to vote for it. I'm not going to ask you as a committee to vote for it. I'm going to ask you if you would be so kind to move this to rules with the amendment attached to it. I would like to find out more about the Salem Kaiser School District was mentioned. They have a policy that apparently, from what testimony was, is even more expansive what this amendment is. I'd like to find out what that is in terms of the ability to do the background screening. I am very concerned about volunteers in the schools, the impact that this would have. I don't think, let me just say, because you know, I'm taking advantage of our last committee hearing as your chair just to run off my mouth, but let me just say, I don't think there's a single person, I know there's not a single person on this committee or in this room who doesn't want absolute safety for our kids. I mean, that's a given. I mean, I think, you know, I've got three kids in the schools, and if somebody hurts my kids, I'd go nuts. And the same with any of the kids that are in schools. Not a person here doesn't want that. I think we want to find the best way to make it work, to make sure our kids are safe, the safest we can possibly make them. We want to make sure that volunteers can move through to help in the schools with the programs that we have. I know the reading programs that we have in the Ashland schools depend almost entirely on volunteers to make them work when they flood the schools in the morning to do their reading programs. I'm concerned about that. So those are my thoughts on the bill. That's where I'd like to go with it. I'd like to spend some more time with it in rules and try to see what we can get out of it. Representative Greenman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I understand the urge to move it to rules, but I don't understand the urge to put the amendment on it before we move it to rules. It's going to be worked in rules. It can be worked with the amendment. And the amendment's really not completely germane to the purpose of the bill. I mean, it is a nice opportunity to put a vehicle on. That's apparently failed a couple of times already in this session. I mean, it would seem to me we've got to move it to rules, and if and when it gets heard in rules, the opponents of the amendment can make that argument in rules.
I'll give you a blunt answer. I think that there are people that are split on the bill itself, that if the amendment is part of it, they will feel more comfortable with it, that making sure it remains part of the conversation for the overall bill.
Apparently that's not true of this committee, though. I mean, yes. Yeah, if you're saying we'll put the amendment so we can pass it out of this committee, that's a different argument.
I believe I don't have the votes on this committee to pass the bill to rules without the amendment.
Well, you don't have this vote to pass it to rules with the amendment.
That's interesting. Vice Chair Kopp.
Mr. Chair, I've been sitting here listening for a long time, and as a mother, somebody that has lived with many years of different types of abuse, my heart is heavy for anybody that has to deal with that. I have 12 years of experience as a school administrator, and when I became a teacher and administrator, I did not realize how deeply I was committed to make sure that all children in our schools are safe. It's one of the reasons why I sit on this committee. I believe, as the statement that was given here earlier, our schools are the safest place right now a child can be. There's three administrators that sit on this committee, and I'll be hanged if I'd want to be in one of our schools if somebody had committed a violation that we've talked about today. Because it would be taken care of, and it would be taken care of right, and it would be taken care of now. Our current system with teacher standards and practices and the Department of Education, I believe they do an excellent job of reviewing all these things that we've been talking about. To put that additional layer on a school human resource officer, director, looking at it through only his eyes, not at the whole big picture, I believe it could be construed as very subjective and not objective. Representative Greenlick will probably be very proud of me because I don't support this amendment as written. I believe it has a tremendous amount of potential. But to say that school districts can seek this information and discriminate it objectively is, I think, almost asking above and beyond the call of duty. Their list of duties between transportation, human resources, deciding whether it should be a snow day, whether the fire drill is authentic or not. Believe it or not, our lives as school administrators sometimes have very little to do with teaching, and yet the thing that we all are committed to is the safety of our children. Anyway, that's my point for the record, and this is far, the amendment is far a deviation from the original bill, and it's just two things smooshed together that don't fit very well.
Thank you, Mr. Cobb. Further discussion? Representative Lim, you've been awfully quiet today.
Well, I'm listening carefully.
Mr. Chair, would you like a motion on the... on the amendments?
Yes, I take a motion on the amendment.
Okay. Then in that case, Mr. Chair, I move the dash A6 amendments to Senate Bill 724A.
Representative Kremel moves the dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 724A. I'm sure there might be discussion.
Well, we have this principle in healthcare called cost effectiveness, and the principle is you have to balance, this is what proportionality means in this case, you have to balance what the costs and what the consequences are. And in this case, the costs and consequences are the cost of leaving very valuable resources in the school. The consequences is to pick up a very rare event, and that will be volunteers who might have something in their background that would make a school district, and I suppose this is the school district that's involved in the decision, whether or not yes or no, whether my arrest for trespass in a migrant case in 1967 was relevant, and that would disqualify me as being a volunteer. Somebody's going to have to make that kind of decision, and there'll be less clear ones. My guess is I probably could sneak by on that one, since that was 40 years ago, and I haven't had any other arrests, at least none that I have to admit to. but I mean, it just seems to me this creates an enormous problem. And I think you can find a more finely tuned way of doing it. And I further think the bill, which I'll talk about when we discuss the bill itself, if it's going to rules, should go to rules cleanly. And that argument can be made at a later place. So I'm a no on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? I personally have misgivings about the amendment I mentioned earlier. I'd like to see what, for instance, other some sample school districts do to handle this. If we do end up with the amendment and the bill in rules, Representative Rubel and I still have the pleasure of continuing to work on it. And for what it is worth, and I won't speak for Representative Roland, I know him well enough to at least indicate that it's true for him as well, I will continue to work with members of this committee on this issue and on the amendment if it is adjusted in rules. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lim.
You mentioned I'm too quiet.
Maybe not too quiet. No criticism.
No, just taking as that. Is that a sixth amendment, was
correct.
It?
Correct.
Yes. Most of the school volunteers, they are good citizens, and without them, we cannot function well, not only school, but many other organizations. But the problem is very few people got some problems. So with this amendment, it will make sure that a few people, I don't want to, go through the crack. And this is a safety issue for the children, so I'm willing to support the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Andy, would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem?
Excused.
Representative
Dahl? Aye.
Representative Greenlight?
No.
No.
Representative Cromwell?
Aye.
Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Buckley?
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Cromwell?
I have real misgivings about sending the bill over to rules, but we'll make the motion I think this is an education issue. And it should be dealt with here in the Education Committee. And it has been dealt with here in the Education Committee, in my estimation. So I have some real misgivings about sending it to Rules. If the bill's changed over in the Rules Committee, then, we'll have to see what it looks like when it comes out as to whether or not it would be something that I would be able to support or recommend to my colleagues to support. But with that said, kind of as a preface. I will move Senate Bill 724A as amended be sent to the House floor without recommendation. And I know I'm getting there. I'm reading the script, and you don't have to make that part of the motion. And that the bill be referred to the Committee on Elections, Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Give me that script.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Cromwell moves Senate Bill 724A to be sent to the House floor without recommendation as amended that the bill be referred to Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. Discussion. Representative Greenlich.
Yeah, I think there are a few times in a session when moral courage becomes an issue. And I think this bill is one of them. I mean, I made a commitment to my constituents the first time I ran in 1999 that they could expect a couple of things from me. One would be that I would tell the truth, that if they wanted to hear fairy tales, they should go to the library on Saturday morning where they read fairy tales, and that I would listen to them and hear what they thought, but that I would vote my conscience. I can't speak for other members of the committee and other members of my caucus and other members of the House, but it feels like most of us, a majority of the House and a majority of the committee, would vote for this measure because they do believe in human forgiveness. They do believe a child that gets forced into prostitution when she's 15 years old has a right to be forgiven and to live a life. I was very much taken by Senator Carter's moral and religious perspective on this bill. I think we should vote on this bill. I think we should pass it on, even as amended. We should pass it on to the House and vote on it on the House floor, and I think we should pass it on the House floor. And I don't think we should be thinking about what Lars Larson is going to say about putting prostitutes in the school district any more than we should pay any attention to the other stupid things he says every day. And I just think setting it to rules is wrong. I hope you will, if it goes to rules, work hard to get it out of rules and find 31 people in the House that has the courage to vote for something that they know makes sense to them, even if they're going to take some hits for it.
That's my intent. Thank you, Representative Greenlee. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Greenlee.
I would just note that I would be more than happy to amend the motion to just send it directly to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. We have a motion, and Andy, I'm wondering.
The other thing I would point out also is that I would also be happy to amend the motion to send it to rules with a due pass recommendation. I think, you know, the way the bill is structured now with the amendment, it's something that I can get behind. I don't know that I can't speak for my colleagues, and so, but I...
stick to the script.
But I think... but otherwise...
Given the time that we have, I will I'll accept a vote on the motion. If Andy would please call the roll.
What's the motion?
The motion is as first made to move the bill to rules to the House floor with the subsequent referral to election ethics and rules as amended.
And without recommendation.
Without recommendation. Andy. Excused.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Representative
Crumble?
Aye.
Representative
Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Lynn?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Members, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 724A. I'm going to thank each one of you for excellent work this session. It's been an honor to be your chair. We will have a couple informational hearings during the month of June. Derek is collecting suggestions for things that the committee might want to look at before we adjourn. Is there anything else before we adjourn? With that,
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Chair, thank you for your leadership. Enjoy serving.
Thank you.
Representative, it's my honor and privilege working with all the members in this education committee. I think we have done a lot with your leadership and the way working with a bipartisan manner, and I do appreciate that. I just want to put that record.
Thank you, Representative.
I think you ought to take a vote on his leadership.
Really, man? No, everything was fine until today. Mr. Chair, I move that we... I say we put, in the interim, Greenlee's up for trade.
Okay, hitting second base.
With that, we put you on. Thank you, members. Thank you.